Here we are. And good morning. It's Monday, the 8th of August. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Welcome to Wisconsin's Coffee Break. Luke Mathers is here as well. Joining us shortly is a state assembly candidate from Western Wisconsin who's going to call out the local media there for not running the candidate question that they asked her for. In our 9 o'clock hour, we'll talk to Sean Fetteplace of Main Street Alliance Wisconsin. He has a lot to say about what the Biden administration is getting done on behalf of small businesses and what Wisconsin legislators are not getting done. And later, I think we'll be talking with political analyst Joe Zepecki with more on what is, by any measure, the most productive first 2 years of a presidency in the modern era. The problem, of course, is that Democrats tried to do even more, and because they didn't get everything they wanted, the big wins of the past week or two are being framed as anything other than what they are, landmark accomplishments. Any one of them would be a big deal, but you rolled several into one, not everything. And there were hiccups along the way, but it's still a big package of improvements that really underscore, you know, that somebody's working towards something, and there's an entire political class that is all about obstructing that progress, but we still don't really know what they're for policy-wise. So we're going to talk about that and review that in several segments this morning. You can reach the show at 715-388-7155 or radio at upnorthnewswi.com. Luke and I both had plans over the weekend, and we are here to tell you that seasonal affective disorder is real and is not limited to winter, Luke, because as I like to say sometimes on the weekends, especially the holiday weekends when it rains, God hates campers. That's all I can figure. Because I mean, you were supposed to be.
I did for one night. I did for one night. I got one out of the two, which in my book, that's not too bad.
Mm-hmm. But not two, because the weather.
Yeah, we were afraid. So I've had a recent streak with the rain that hasn't been great. Tried out a new tent, got it for my fiance, then girlfriend, a few Christmases back, and we tried it out last year in Door County. And we weren't expecting the rain, and it rained pretty much all day. So we spent the day going to shops across Door County, which was still a great time. But by the time we got back to the tent that night, it was soaked through and through. And so we had to kind of pack up that night and head back to Sun Prairie relatively late. Yeah. And that was
pack up your wet tent and go back. I mean, look, you got her from the girlfriend stage to the fiance stage, but I'm telling you, if you want to close the deal, you might want to reconsider trying to, you know, tie her up into a wet sack.
We got a new tent then. And so we got it replaced by Coleman, which was really, they were helpful. They replaced the tent. They were very apologetic that it was labeled as weatherproof, like it was a WeatherTech tent or something along those lines, and they said that it wouldn't leak, and it did, so they replaced it. But rather than try out the replacement this year when we saw the forecast to 3 to 5 inches on Saturday night, we decided to pack up still dry, and we enjoyed it. We still had our sweet corn over the fire and our brats for dinner, but then shortly after dinner we took off to head back home rather than face the rain.
I will say that part of the season was nice. I too had some of the first sweet corn of the year, and that was great. But it did have a seasonal affective disorder, you know, feel to it, because on Saturday, by and large, I mean, it was crazy humid and overcast and rainy in spots. And then yesterday was pretty much gray throughout the entire day, with some places getting rain and others just getting that grayness. And it always feels like a lost opportunity when you essentially don't have great weather on a summer weekend. We only get so many of these summer weekends, and you know, a lot of people plan their activities. You know, Luke was trying to camp. I questioned that decision, but he still tried it, and many others do. I had a wedding and a reunion. The reunion was of people who had worked at Channel 13 in Eau Claire over the past whatever it's been, 65 years or something like that, and that had never happened before. My co-anchor at the time, Judy Clark, who is still there, and who probably has had you know, more co-anchors than she could possibly count over the years, because she is rock solid. But she and I talked 20 years ago about how many people had already come and gone in the nearly 10 years I'd been working there, and that we really should try to get some kind of a reunion together. And it just never happened for various reasons. And then finally, Scott Cohn, you might hear and know the name because he's a reporter at CNBC, but he started at Channel 13 many, many years ago in the 70s, early 80s. And he and Judy finally started to work things out. COVID got in the way, but then they finally pulled it off. I've got my little can cozy here with my TV 13 logo on it. And it was great to see everybody. I mean, not everybody, but we saw a lot of folks that we hadn't seen in years. Who knows when we'll see them again. But oh my gosh, was it humid. I mean, we all looked like drowned rats just standing out there because it was an outdoor event. And then I had to go from there to Red Wing, where there was a friend's daughter's wedding, and they moved everything indoors. They were planning an outdoor wedding. I'd criticize that, but both my daughters picked outdoor weddings, and you know, we got great weather pretty much for both, so I can't complain. But you know, again, this is just nothing's guaranteed about the weather, and that's why, if I do nothing else on weekends where there's rain, I will mock the people at Target Field for not putting a roof over their heads like the Brewers are smart enough to do. Now, if they would just play smarter baseball. let's take our first break. This is Up North News. Get our daily newsletter by signing up at upnorthnewswi.com. We'll be right back. This is Up North News. Find us on social media by searching for Up North News WI. Don't forget the WI, or upnorthnewswi.com, which is not to be confused with the Wednesday night radio show heard on some of these fine stations. You might recall the Up North podcast, which was something that Kirk Bangstad put together. And then I enjoyed helping out, and so did our first guest today for a time before she found some other things to keep her busy. Sarah Yacoub has run for state assembly in Western Wisconsin before. She is doing so again. Took herself off the radio to put herself back into the arena and try to give people in that, what is it, St. Croix and Pierce County district, try to give them a state representative who lives in the district. And we'll probably get to that in a little bit as well. But I my attention was grabbed by her posts about, you know, what a local newspaper asked her for and then didn't follow through on. So, Sarah, it's good to talk to you. Hope you're doing well today.
Hi, Pat. Great to be here with you. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. So what caught my attention, and by the way, if you don't follow Sarah on social media, follow her on Twitter. It's Wiss Mama Bear. That's at Wiss Mama Bear is where you'll find Sarah. But Sarah, you mentioned that one of the local newspapers, you know, was looking for candidate questionnaire responses. That's nothing new. You've done that. I've done that. You know, and usually you don't think anything of it, but apparently there was a real lack of follow-up, I guess. What did the, you still with us?
And any detectives? Oh, can you hear me now?
Yep, hear you just fine. Go ahead, Sarah.
Okay, excellent. Any detectives in the audience can sort of help us figure this one out here. But so they send out a questionnaire, a request for questionnaire, mid, late July, and indicating that my opponent and I will both get the same questions, and they'll run them either last week of July or first week of August before the primary. You know, neither of us have primary opponents, but I figure, okay, fine, that works. And so August 5th rolls around after the published date, and, you know, I reach out and say, hey, you know, didn't see our responses, and get this sort of excuses that all sort of raised some questions as to, okay, this doesn't exactly make sense. But yeah, here we are. It seems as though they don't want the voters to see our responses.
But it raises the question. I mean, did Shannon, State Representative Shannon Zimmerman, send one in? Do we know that they ignored both of you, or were they tap dancing because they didn't get one?
No. So at the beginning, Mr. Frusted, Sam had indicated that he had not received a response yet. But that he had gotten the questions, he had indicated that he would participate. So I don't know whether he had submitted something or not. My guess is, so I answered the questions very candidly, and got into some of the 2020 dynamics, got into, you know, some of the reasons I wasn't going to run, in a way that probably was a little bit more inside baseball than they're used to. But I'm not sure how much I should read into the actual substance of what happened here, but I can see why a local paper that operates as a functional arm of the Republican Party would not want to run these responses, because they so candidly talk about the dynamics that we see in local elections.
Well, so what they were hoping for was the usual, you know, pablum that candidates from either party are prone to giving sometimes if consultants, you know, twist their arm enough. And that's right. Something that's just not going to happen to you. You and Kirk Bankstead, have had no problem being in hostile territory and, kicking dirt, in somebody else's face if they've got it coming. But what really I thought was interesting was, well, first off, I don't know if they gave you a word limit or anything, but I could understand if they'd say, hey, we're not, you know, we only have so much ink in the barrel, but they've got a website too. So did they tell you there was a limit?
No limit. And I, keep a loose eye on sort of local news and keep my finger on the pulse here. And doesn't seem to be an issue. I looked at the responses of the third congressional district candidates and didn't seem to be about on par with what I had submitted. But no suggestion of a word limit. There was some issue of timing, and I thought, well, there's a lot of time between the primary and November. These pertain to November, and we don't know the idea that the Democratic primary in the Hudson Star Observer would, for the third congressional district, would somehow be a limiting factor. You know, it doesn't make much sense. We're in the seventh, and we don't have a Democratic primary. So, it was interesting.
Yeah. Well, let's get into a couple of the questions that, the people there didn't get to read, but maybe they'll hear it here. The first one up was, what was the primary reason you decided to run for office? And I'm just going to grab something you said, and if you want to expound on it from there, go ahead. But you said, I wasn't going to run. 2020 was hard on my family. My opponent and his followers spread really ugly lies about me that were hurtful to our kids. My opponent and his financial backers spent in the ballpark of $1 million spreading lies to convince people to hate me. They couldn't run on his record, so the alternative was to keep him in office to bash me. But Sarah, that simply begs the question, why again did you decide to run for office one more time?
Right. And I told Representative Jody Emerson, but I'll find you someone, quite a few times. And she sent me sad cat emoji pictures. And it came down to, nobody else is going to run against him. And if you don't run, he will be handed his fourth term. And, there's a reason for that. So also within that answer is the explanation that traditionally, and my opponent's no exception, they run as Democrats. They run as proponents of public schools, affordable health care, clean water, and working families. And then once the election is done, then they resume sort of the agenda of the U-lines or, the Koch brothers, where they are very much anti-labor, anti-public schools, anti-working families. And so it's a big money machine, as we know, but the dynamic is nobody in their right mind runs for office. The more of a threat you are to actually beat them, the nastier they get, which means we have, plenty of wonderful candidates, or would be wonderful candidates, in the area to represent the Democratic Party, business owners, attorneys, teachers, public health people. And they just look at they make the calculation that this makes absolutely no sense to do it. We laid the foundation in 2020 with voter contacts and votes earned, that it actually, it made a lot of sense to get back in and try to really turn out that vote to make sure Ron Johnson's at office to make sure we can keep Tony Evers in office. So I'm glad it's a decision that we made, but yeah, certainly one that might earn me a masochist plaque.
No doubt there, because we, you know, as we've talked about on the Wednesday night show, we need people like that, you know, to run, even in that, you know, David and Goliath, Hail Mary kind of scenario, because again, with every person on the ballot from the top down, you know, if there are local people down ballot, that only helps attract, you know, more votes for the people at the top of the ticket. I want to switch to an issue here, because you were asked what one local concern facing your area needs to be addressed. And I mean, obviously it's healthcare for many reasons. What I'm going to start with, though, just to toss this to you, and then you can talk about the other parts of healthcare that were in your response, was the vote over the weekend on the Inflation Reduction Act by Congress, where Democrats included a provision for a price cap on insulin, which would have been an absolute gimme to Republicans to say, well, I don't like this bill, but you know, I'll go along with this amendment, but I'm still going to vote no on the bill. No, they vote, most of them, including Ron Johnson, voted no on the price cap for insulin amendment, which was a complete gimme vote for them. I have to admit, even as cynical as I am, I was a little surprised by that. Were you?
You know, not much that Ron Johnson does anymore surprises me, because he is who he is, or, you know, when someone shows you who they are, believe them kind of thing. But it's still atrocious. And actually, you know, piggybacking off what you're saying, what was neat about what John Stewart was able to do with the PAC Act and the veterans is get loud enough and push back on their false narratives successfully enough that it scared Republican senators into thinking, oh no, the people are going to push past our talking points. And that is not something that we see a lot. So they have an answer for why they voted against insulin caps. They have an answer for why they vote against formula for hungry babies. They have an answer for all of this. And if for their base, for whom it is very socially inconvenient to dig any deeper or to challenge or to question or to go, wow, this person who I voted for is lying to me, or this person I'm donating money to is lying to me, that's a hard pill to swallow. So more often than not, people won't push past the talking points, and they take that to the bank, and it earns them re-election, and you know, they can all sit down and go home. What we're seeing now is people like yourself, people like John Stewart, people that are standing up and willing to say the narrative louder, or the counter narrative louder, so that they stop getting away with just nonsense. They get up and say the sky is green with polka dots, but they say it with conviction and repeat it, and enough of their base goes, okay, so it works.
Well, what they say is, again, that they're for some form of healthcare, and yet they have turned away billions of federal dollars that would have increased access to health care, to mental health care, to dental care. And that continues to astound me that Wisconsin Republicans aren't paying a heavier price. And I guess I will say, I think that Wisconsin Democrats have been trying to get that message out, but I think they just need to try harder. And then the last question I want to talk to you in for the next minute or so here is, you were asked, as often happens in these media questionnaires, how will you work with the other side? How will you be bipartisan to get things done? And I liked your answer. And like, well, if they're serious about it, I will, but you're not going to just do it to look nice.
Right. Well, and it's substance over form. And one of the things that really shocked me is that when the Democrats held the majority, almost 40% of Republican bills saw the light of day with the hearing, which is really neat bipartisan work. Since the Republicans have been in charge for over 10 years now, less than 1% of Democratic bills ever get a hearing. So, you know, one of the things I hear when I'm on the doors is, oh, well, both sides are just equally awful and both sides are bad. And that's just what happens when you're in the majority party. Well, no, historically, we have a party that wants to crush the other side to a point of extremism. And that's a topic for another day. But then we have a party that actually cares about good government and working through problems. And if you really care about breaking through gridlock and working through problems, then, you know, start voting Democratic, because those are the people that are actually there acting in good faith.
Right. Hey, I think the kids did great, you know, for the segment. I think 15 minutes was spot on.
I agree.
Sarah, so great to talk to you. Sarah Yacoub, running for Assembly in Western Wisconsin. Have a great rest of the summer. We'll talk again soon.
Thanks, Pat. Take care.
All right. See you now. This is Up North News. I'm Pat Kreitler. We'll talk more about what Sarah had to say and other issues coming up right after this break.
Wisconsin Conversation, real information. Live from Lake Wasota, this is Up North News with Pat Kreitler.
Where it's a little windy out on Lake Wasota today, and we are going to be stuck in the 70s today across much of Wisconsin. So basically, you know, Pat Kreitler musical tastes weather. We'll be stuck in the 70s. We'll get warmer Tuesday and Wednesday, then we'll cool down again for the rest of the week. All according to the National Weather Service. Chances of rain depend on what part of the state you're in, so monitor your local forecast to see about the possibility of rain Tuesday or Wednesday when the temperatures go up a little bit. Brewers are in trouble. There's just no other way to put this. I mean, they blew both games against Cincinnati Saturday and Sunday. They have gone 1-5 against lowly Pittsburgh and Cincinnati since the Josh Hader trade. It has been your classic terrible, horrible, no good, very bad week. The Brewers were up 4 games in the division. They are now 2 games behind the Cards in the division, and they just need to fix everything. Hitting, we've known about. Pitching, you know, we've known about. But especially defense. I mean, Luke and I were commenting, we both at some point over the weekend, you know, would throw up our hands and go, what are you doing? You know, these are drills you practice a million times. Again, I'm not pretending to be a major league athlete. I'm just saying, if you're a major league athlete, you make some of those throws.
Well, I can respect losing. If you play the game there and you just get outbeat by the other team that you're up against that day. It's a long season. It's 162 games. You're not going to win all of them. I can respect that. But when you're losing because of sloppy play and you're not just doing like the fundamentals and you're allowing somebody to get walked in off of a hit pitch or just a pass ball, those mistakes are really frustrating as a fan, because those shouldn't be happening. But we are in that slump right now this summer where it's post All-Star break, it's post trade deadline. The roster that you got is the roster that you're going to have through the end now. And it is, they're slumping a little bit. It's not great to watch.
No, but again, it's, you know, we're far from done here. The Cardinals had their own long losing streak recently. So, you know, we'll see what we can pick up. You know, like I said, summer's still going on. Summer was going on as well with the Wisconsin State Fair in West Allis. Christina Laurie put together a nice little video of that on Instagram. And Wisconsin Valley Fair in Wausau had a good run. And Evan Pretzer, our freelance reporter up there, put together a nice video that I posted on our Up North News social pages, Facebook and Instagram. So if you want some of the sights and sounds of summer in Wisconsin that don't involve Luke and me just, you know, caterwauling about gray skies and rain, that you want to go there for some of the happier stuff. As I was looking at Twitter, which I guess is, you know, like I've said before, it's kind of the new AP UPI teletype machine that used to, you know, clackety clack in the background of every newsroom. Now it's Twitter. And every so often you'll see somebody trending on there and you'll think, oh, did they die? You know, and you click on it and you find out they didn't die. You know, maybe they said something, but more likely, nothing happened, and nobody knows why some things trend on Twitter. They just come up, and that's what caught my eye this morning with, and only gentlemen of a certain age will get this, Christy McNichol. And right now, every guy in his 50s and 60s, his ears just perked up going, oh yeah, whatever happened to her? You know, first TV crush of, you know, the entire early or late baby boomer, you know, generation. And I still don't know why she was trending. But I see a lot of people, you know, complaining about it. And one person put it best. When stars who are old enough to have been on the Love Boat are trending, Twitter should be forced to write not dead underneath if, in fact, they are not dead. Because there's just too many people that spit their coffee out when they see a star on there and think, oh, yeah, I remember watching them on the Love Boat. The Love Boat needs to make a comeback. Luke, I think that there have been enough. It's all reality shows now, and the reality shows are garbage. Okay, they're all fighting and throwing things, and we're talking about making radio pleasant again here. Let's make TV pleasant by taking all these reality people and give them a nice syrupy script and put them on a new Love Boat instead.
Yeah, but they're recreating so many ideas that have been previously done. So maybe there's a chance for it. I just don't know. That people watch the reality TV, Pat. That's the interesting part of it.
That doesn't mean it's good.
I'm not saying it's good, but there's a market for it. So people like it. I don't know if there's necessarily a market for a Love Boat reboot, but maybe there is.
I think you try it with the, you know, hey, anything with good writing. I'm not a science fiction guy. I watched a show about dragons, you know, because there was good writing in Game of Thrones. So, you know, to me, it always comes down to the writing. If you can write anything well and attract people. We were talking to Sarah Yacoub in the last segment about legislation that does and doesn't get passed at the state and federal level. And we're going to take some time off and on today to talk about the Inflation Reduction Act. It's kind of like Troy McClure, you know, Troy McClure on The Simpsons. So yeah, you might remember me from such shows as the Inflation Reduction Act. You might remember it from a previous incarnation called Build Back Better. Build Back Better was President Biden's original domestic package after taking care of, you know, certain crises like the pandemic and the economic crash that resulted from the pandemic. So we had things like the, you know, the American Rescue Plan, and there was the bipartisan infrastructure law. But there were still things that a president wanted to get done. And as any president does, this is something every president does. You have a wish list, which, you know, the official term, if you want, is a domestic agenda. There were things he wanted to get done and that other Democrats wanted to get done because they thought they controlled Congress, which would be true if, you know, all 50 Democrats in the Senate, you know, behaved like actual Democrats. Anyhow, so Build Back Better was drafted with all of its many moving pieces. And yeah, it didn't take too long, although in fits and starts, to figure out that, you know, Joe Manchin of West Virginia and Kristen Sinema of Arizona were not going to go along for various reasons. Joe Manchin has received more money from the coal and oil and gas industries than any other member of Congress. And Kristen Sinema is just her own person. She's not in a great way. You know, this is somebody that ran as somebody that was essentially, you know, a Green Party candidate at one point, and now her main thing has been to protect tax breaks for hedge funds. It's odd. It's been a weird couple of years trying to figure them out. And as a result, go ahead, Luke.
Yeah, it has been a weird couple of years, but I almost think, do you believe that all of the other bipartisan, so the two major accomplishments, the American Rescue Plan and the Inflation Reduction Act, those were both passed 50-50 with Vice President Kamala Harris breaking the tie. But do you believe that had we just jumped right away to reconciliation to do Build Back Better and get it passed, that we could have hit all of these other bipartisan accomplishments that now Democrats can go and use as also running on re-election, that they can find compromise in other areas, but I don't know if those necessarily would have all gotten done had Democrats back in way the beginning of the year passed reconciliation, because it seems like, and the CHIPS bill was one of the best indications of it, Mitch McConnell was willing to play ball on some smaller issues rather than the jumping to those after reconciliation. Because I don't think a post Build Back Better, there would have been all these other bipartisan efforts passed.
Well, I mean, the very first thing I have to say to all of that is, you know, just rejecting the notion of the reconciliation process, because The filibuster has no place in American government. We have these unique situations, the Electoral College, the Senate, which is a byproduct of that, natural gerrymander. We have the Second Amendment has been perversely interpreted in a way to make us unique. And we have this filibuster, which, again, at some point, a body like the Senate, we needed either Al Gore once upon a time or Kamala Harris last year to open up the very first hearing of the first session of the Senate, declare it dead, and make them do otherwise. Who are you going to run to? But anyway, that's all me putting on my wishes. But there's just you can set up reasons why certain things should have to get a supermajority. But what we've started from is allowing a filibuster and then carving away the things that the filibuster doesn't cover. And it's just created this mess, which, certainly has a lot of people cynical. And that's what I'm going to be trying to fight through today and beyond, is fight through that cynicism to say that despite all of the hiccups, despite the ridiculousness of Kyrsten Sinema's and Joe Manchin's demands, the fact of the matter is, any domestic agenda needs to be pounded out, needs to, some people need to be made happy. Let's not forget, in 2017, Donald Trump and Mitch McConnell thought their tax bill was sailing through when Ron Johnson put the brakes on it and said, your tax bill's going nowhere until I get another tax break that benefited some billionaires. So not a great example, but again, just to point out that every domestic agenda has some give and take. And that's what we've seen with Build Back Better, getting derailed. And then eventually Joe Manchin and Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer put together a package of legislation that was able to get support. But again, it only came after, Kyrsten Sinema forced yet another change to, protect hedge fund managers and other, corporate breaks. But one of the things to keep in mind is that of the many things the Inflation Reduction Act does is that it does put on that minimum tax on corporations. Let me take care of one thing first. It's good to go from 0 to 15 because you pay taxes, you play by the rules. Most of us pay our taxes and play by the rules. Many companies pay their taxes, play by the rules. So this talking point that, every company is just going to pass on that 15%, down to the consumer. No, they're not. The companies, by and large, see their utility bills go up. They see payroll costs go up. They see other things go up. McDonald's has seen its CEO pay go up like crazy, but that didn't necessarily translate into a Big Mac that you can't afford anymore. So it's really a matter of fairness. And one of the things that is most fair is to close loopholes that allow very wealthy corporations to take advantage of you and me. We have to make up the difference if we want the roads to be paved, if we want, our men and women in uniform to get paid and such. But it does so much more than that. Along with some tax fairness, it also is going to help with a changing climate by making some of the biggest investments ever in green energy and creating jobs. And yes, Manchin got some provisions in that also protect an oil and gas pipeline in his state of West Virginia. It's not pretty, but that is the sausage making process, that while that got in, so did a landmark level of investments that are going to make electric cars cheaper, for example, and make it cheaper to retrofit your home, where, yeah, you're going to spend some money up front, but you're going to save that and so much more on the back end with lower utility bills. And then there's the whole notion of lower healthcare costs. And I tops amongst that is the way that taxpayers are finally going to save money on the Medicare prescription drug benefit. I have no idea how this has been able to survive this long. But Republicans from the very beginning, when in the Bush administration, was it 2003, I think, passed this, they did so by making sure that Medicare could not negotiate with drug companies for prices, despite having that massive buying power. And I know they don't have the buying power. It's all the recipients who do, who get a discount. But that is besides the point. The fact is that Medicare could have that same buying power that the VA has, and that the government has in other areas. And it has somehow managed to survive this long, and it is finally going away. And what is not going away is the temporary premium assistance for people buying health care insurance on the Affordable Care Act marketplace. That's going to be preserved, so that's going to keep health care costs down as well. That's just the top line stuff. We'll be talking more in the coming day and days about that and about what a landmark piece of legislation this is. This is Up North News. I'm Pat Kreitlow. We will wrap up this hour's conversation in just a moment.
From Lake Wissota, once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
I want to give thanks to one of our listeners, and I don't know if RJ is his or her first name, but we'll support the email address. We were talking, Luke, about some of the most Midwestern things that are out there and what's on that list of Midwestern words that are used. Walleye was number one on the list. But one that stood out on the list to somebody was blacktop as opposed to asphalt. And RJ wanted to pass along a story that said when our granddaughter was little, grandpa was babysitting. She was about 3 or 4 and moving her little plastic outdoor chair around. Grandpa told her to put it down and leave it on the blacktop. Her response was, "Grandpa, it's down here and the sky is up there. It's not blacktop, it's black bottom." I can't argue with the wisdom of a 3-4-year-old. I mean, now I will never think of blacktop the same way again, that maybe it should be black bottom.
And I was thinking about that list over the weekend, Pat. I think one of the other words missing that we all say a lot, ope.
Ope.
There was no ope on there.
Should most definitely be there. And I think we've only started to say it more thanks to Charlie Behrens pointing it out all the time.
Oh, yeah.
I certainly add it much more often, just for fun. Jody Emerson is a state representative from the Eau Claire area. We talked to Sarah Yacoub before. I want to talk to Sarah today before the election. She doesn't have a primary challenger, so she doesn't have a contested race right now. Same goes for Representative Emerson. And Jody was on Capital City Sunday over the weekend and was asked about the primary challenger to Robin Voss, the state assembly speaker, who is as rock-ribbed a Republican as they come. He is Mr. Republican in the state of Wisconsin, but he's not Mr. Wackadoodle Republican. And as a result, he's got this primary challenge from the MAGA wing, if you will. Donald Trump, to nobody's surprise, has endorsed Robin Voss's primary opponent. And Jody Emerson was asked if she had a horse in that race when she was on Capital City Sunday. Here's what she had to say.
After having worked with Speaker Voss and now hearing from candidate Steen, what outcome do you prefer Tuesday? Robin Voss keeping his job as Speaker or Voss out of the legislature altogether, but someone further to the right taking his seat in the assembly?
That's really up for the citizens of the 63rd Assembly District to decide that. But I really feel sorry for them because they're having to make this choice between a conspiracy theorist and someone who's wasted over $1 million of taxpayer money to pacify a former president.
So you're saying you are not endorsing either candidate?
Oh, no, not endorsing either.
After having...
That's the best answer. I feel sorry for the voters of the 63rd district. Not just the ones who are, lean more progressive, but the ones who are, still the moderate Republicans that are out there in the world. But this is also a crisis of Voss's own making for so many reasons, not the least of which is one that Sarah Yacoub referenced in our previous half hour. She noted that before Republicans took over the legislature, the 4 years that I was in the legislature prior to 2010, it was, and prior to that, obviously, it was just routine business that the minority party, the party not in power, would get some of their bills heard. It didn't mean the bills would necessarily pass, and majority parties have always been guilty of poaching ideas from bills from the other party. But you all always at least did the courtesy of giving some of those bills a hearing. And in the period prior to Republicans taking over, nearly 40% of Republican bills at least got a committee hearing, meaning that the public could come in and talk about them. Republicans could call experts to come in and testify about the merits of the bill. And like I said, some of the provisions, you know, probably got passed later on in Democratic bills and vice versa, you know, in a time prior to that. But again, compare about 40% of Republican bills getting a hearing toward this most recent, toward the past decade with Republicans in control, and less than one or about 1% of Democratic bills got a public hearing. I'll say that again. About 1% of Democratic bills were given the courtesy of a public hearing by committee chairs, compared to about 40% of Republican bills going into it. This is, as Sarah noted in her survey response, you know, we have a legislature defined by making sure that their partisan opponents don't get any kind of a win, and, you know, try to own the libs whenever you can. And that is, you know, there has got to be more to public service. Well, I'm sorry, there's got to be more to politics than politics. Politics are great in the even numbered years when you're voting. At some point, it used to revert to public service in the odd numbered years. You know, you'd been elected, your person from the other party had been elected. You see each other all the time. You share ideas on this or that. And, you know, then you get something done. It is so much more poisonous now, as, you know, the Newt Gingrich, you know, era has begat the Trump era, you know, all of which, you know, refers to, you know, socialism and tries to scare voters. And I saw a great example of that during the Milwaukee Brewer game yesterday. And I guess it's been on Milwaukee and Green Bay TV as well. There was this ad, and it was just all a bunch of angry white people, you know, and I cut out their faces and I put a post of it on the Up North News Facebook page. Go to Up North News WI on Facebook, and you'll see it almost looks like a meme. You know, these five angry white people are all just like, man, crime is this and crime is that, and Tony Evers this and Tony Evers that. First off, folks, crime is not a major concern of most Wisconsinites. In the Marquette poll over the spring, 82% of respondents said they feel safe from crime as they go about their daily activities. It is nowhere near the top issues that they listed as they think about who to vote. But if you can scare enough voters into thinking crime is worse than they know it is, then maybe you'll get something. So who's running this? Is it a victims group? Is it a police group? And again, it's got one of those generic names. It said, you know, sponsored by State Solutions Incorporated. State Solutions Incorporated is basically the nonprofit group affiliated with the Republican Governors Association. This is just the Republican Governors Association trying to scare voters by getting a bunch of angry white people to complain about crime and, you know, coming from or affiliated with Milwaukee or Racine, Kenosha, you know, wink, wink. And that $400,000 ad buy State Solutions is coming from a group that has been targeted in the past. The Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington has charged State Solutions with making millions of dollars disappear in the way that they account for their spending, because they, as a nonprofit, they have to spend less than 50% of their money on political advocacy. Otherwise, they can't be a nonprofit. So the way they you know, play a shell game with the money is suspect. And the watchdog group Money Trails reports on how, you know, that group was created by and has had officers affiliated with the Republican Governors Group. And that group has raised millions of dollars over the years from oil, coal, and other energy companies, none of whom think that crime is big on their list, but it helps them win elections. We will be back to talk about small business in Wisconsin next. You're up north.